Annie's Apple Tree by Jerry McCullough. The hot sun beat down on my shoulders. High in the blue, blue sky above me, a lark circled and sang. I stretched back lazily on the riverbank and watched my old friend Seamus O'Hare as he expertly cast his line over the chuckling brown waters of the little stream. I had known Seamus for many years, since as a child, growing up in a small village of Ardnakill in Donegal, I had learned country lore from him over the happy summer days, everything from how to recognise a lark's call to how to tickle trout in the deep, quiet reaches of the mountain burns. As I watched him, it occurred to me to wonder why Seamus was openly fishing this river instead of, as had been his wont, going stealthily to a remote area where he could poach the waters in safety. And I asked that question with the freedom of an old friend. "Why," replied Seamus, "myself and the owner of this stream are on the best of terms, and I have a welcome to fish here whenever it suits me. Did I never tell you the story?" "No, I don't believe you did, Seamus," I answered him, leaning back more comfortably against a tussock of grass. In the distance, the song of a blackbird echoed round us. The only other sound was the faint ringing of sheep bells. The sun shone from a soft blue stretch of sky. "Why don't you tell me it now?" "Well, now," began Seamus, "you see the little cottage just over the next ridge." I sat up a little to peer after his pointing finger, and could just discern a small, neat-looking cottage, fresh with whitewash, with a comfortable haze of soft smoke floating lazily from its chimney. I could see little of its garden at that distance, but flashes of colour suggested flowers and plenty, and to one side of the low roof there was a tree with wide-spreading branches, whose pink blossoms promised a rich harvest of apples in the autumn. "That cottage is the home of an old friend of mine, Annie O'Grady," Seamus said. "I've known Annie and her man, Sean, since I was a lad the size of sixpence, which you know from school on bright spring days, and giving Sean a hand with the tatey planting. Sean and me were pals, good pals, although he was three times my age, and Annie was a second mother to me. Many's the time I sat at her table and ate Annie's apple tart, fresh homemade from the apples on her tree. No apples like those, Annie always said. Sean planted a tree from a shoot when they were first wed, and it had grown along with their marriage. And because there were no children of the marriage, I guess Annie had a special affection for the tree, almost as if it took the place of a child. There came the time when Sean grew old and died. I won't conceal from you that I wept for him. It was a sore loss for me. Annie suddenly looked older, and I made sure I called with her as often as ever or more. And I thought to myself that she clung to the apple tree in a new way. It seemed to mean something to her beyond understanding. It was some time after that, though many years ago now, that I called at Annie's cottage one bright summer afternoon and found her weeping by the empty fireplace. "Why, Annie," I said, "whatever ails you?" At first she was for drying her tears and pretending to smile as if it were nothing. But I wouldn't have it, and before long I had dragged the story out of her. The cottage, I knew, was rented, and the owner was the Honourable Marjorie Fitzpatrick, a rich woman living mostly in Dublin. Though times she would stay in the big house in the estate across the fields from Annie's cottage. This Honourable Marjorie was a sharp-spoken woman, with what I would call an English accent, though I'm told it's only Dublin. A tall, commandeering woman, good-looking in her way, but not a cuddlesome sort that a man would want for his wife. Well, it seemed this woman, Fitzpatrick, had written to Annie to say that the lease for the cottage was nearly up, and that she would be obliged if Annie would make plans to vacate the cottage when the time was due. She was giving Annie 6 months, which she felt was ample notice, and remained hers faithfully, M.H. Fitzpatrick. P.S. She felt she should explain that there was nothing personal against Annie, who had been a good tenant, but she had had a very good offer for the cottage and intended to sell it. Annie probably knew that demand for cottages in Donegal was increasing at a great rate, and as a businesswoman, this was an offer she could not refuse. M.H.F. I knew it was only a lease, Annie wept, but I never thought she wouldn't renew it. Sean and me started our married life here, and I can't bear to go elsewhere. I could move in with our Maureen, my sister, in Donegal town. What would I do with Sean's apple tree? I couldn't dig it up, and if I did, Maureen has no garden to plant it in. And she wept as if her heart would break. It was the apple tree, I could see, that was the heart of her soul. Now, I'll not deny that I was angry. It seemed to me a selfish act by this Honourable Marjorie Fitzpatrick to drive an old woman from the house she had lived in for so long, just for the sake of the money she would make back. I went home and sat by my own fireplace that evening, and I thought long and hard. And I wondered what there was that I could do to help Annie. It seemed to me that in the 6 months left to her, I would be a fool if I couldn't think of something. A few days later, it began to look as if things were working out for me. It was rumoured all over the neighbourhood that the Honourable Marjorie was coming down for one of her visits to Kilmarnock House, the home of her ancestors for many a year. I had no relationship or friendship with the Honourable Marjorie, but I wondered if maybe I could bring one about, get on speaking terms with the lady, and put in a good word for poor Annie. However, the first I saw of her was in the village street, when I was just coming out of the Golden Pheasant after doing a bit of business with the landlord. She was standing in the centre of the road, her legs planted astride, her hands plunged in the pockets of her tweed jacket, and her head flung back in a burst of laughter that echoed from here to the Errigal Mountain. "It's Seamus O'Hare, isn't it?" she demanded, coming over to me. "I recognise you, my man. I know all about you and your poaching. Well, let me take this opportunity of warning you that if I catch you poaching fish from my stream and selling it to your friend there in the Golden Pheasant, as I know well you do, it will be the worst for you." "Indeed, I never have and never will do such a thing, ma'am," I protested, and I spoke the simple truth. I never sold fish from her stream to the Golden Pheasant, for the landlord there wanted only salmon, which I was well able to get from Lord Kilnevin's loch. I always had to go much further afield to get rid of the Honourable Marjorie's trout. But whether or not she believed me, it didn't seem like a hopeful start to a plea for Annie. It was about a week after this that the news began to go round. There had been a break-in at Kilmarnock House. A lot of jewellery had been stolen, and a gold medal, first prize in the Galway races, which the Honourable Marjorie's father had won when he was just a young lad. It seemed that she was more concerned about the medal than any of the rest, though some of the jewellery was valuable enough. I kept my ears open and picked up what information I could. That evening, I went boldly up to the front entrance of Kilmarnock House, my hat in my hand, and asked to speak to the Honourable Marjorie. The manservant who opened the door didn't seem very happy to see me. He said, "Wait there," and shut the door in my face. However, in a few minutes, he came back and told me to follow him. The Honourable Marjorie was standing in front of the large fireplace, poking restlessly at the smouldering turf fire with one foot, which was clad in a heavy brogue shoe. "Well," she snapped, "what do you want here, Seamus O'Hare?" "I heard something today which I thought might help you, ma'am," I said. "It's about your jewels and the medal that were stolen." At that, she looked up sharply and began to take much more of an interest. "What, do you think you know who stole them?" she asked eagerly. "It's a possibility, ma'am. I can't say more than that." I paused for a moment, then I went on slowly. "I don't want to get anyone into trouble, but I overheard something earlier today, and it makes me fairly confident that the things were taken by a young fellow of the name of Brian McKenna. He'd have hidden them away somewhere, and I don't have any idea where. But what I was thinking... paused again. Well, asked the Honourable Marjorie impatiently. He's not such a bad youngster, ma'am. I thought if it was put to him the right way, he might be persuaded to return the stuff. Especially if you were ready to let the matter drop, if you got your things back safely. Hmm, said the Honourable Marjorie. She thought for a moment. Who is this Brian McKenna? I don't seem to recognise his name. Where would we find him? He's not local. I wouldn't know where to find him myself. That's the problem. The Honourable Marjorie thought some more. Eventually, she looked up. Seamus, she said, as long as I get my father's medal back, I don't care about anything else. I'd like the jewellery as well, mind. I wouldn't mind about letting the rascal off. But how are you going to get talking to the fellow if you don't know where he lives? And are you sure you can persuade him? Persuade him, me? I laughed. No, no, I don't know the youngster well enough to persuade him. But I know someone who does, and who would be bound to see him while he's in this part of the country. A lady who's been like a second mother to young Brian. He'll call in to see her for sure, and if she's willing to speak to him about it, she can show him the sense of taking up your offer. Mind you, she would have to be feeling pretty friendly towards yourself before she would interfere. And who would that be? Asked the Honourable Marjorie a bit anxiously. Perhaps she realised that not everyone around the district was very well inclined towards her. Why, it's my old friend Annie O'Grady, I said. There was a silence for some minutes. Annie O'Grady, said she slowly. Why then, Seamus, there's no hope of her speaking up for me. She can't be feeling very kindly towards me just now, for I've refused to renew the lease of her cottage, and I know she wants me to. Dear, dear, I said, and I whistled and made to seem very concerned. Well, ma'am, I said, it's up to yourself, but if you want the jewels back. And the medal, she interrupted. Yes, and the medal. Then I think your only way is to write a letter to Annie O'Grady, saying you've changed your mind and you want to renew the lease after all. Better make it for a good long time too, for as long as Annie's likely to be there. Then I'll take it round to her this afternoon and talk to her about speaking to young Brian. I think I can get her to see it our way, as long as she knows you'll not be putting her out of the cottage. I never saw such a beaming face as the Honourable Marjorie had when she realised that she was probably going to get her jewels and her father's medal back. She sat down straight away and wrote just what I suggested, and it was witnessed by myself and a manservant, just in case of accidents, as you might say. I took it straight round to Annie and explained to her what I'd arranged, and although she scolded me a bit at first, she was so delighted about the cottage that she agreed to go along with what I'd planned. To cut a long story short, I was able to bring the jewels and the medal back to the Honourable Marjorie the following day, and she was so pleased that she straightaway gave me permission to fish in her stream any time I wanted, and her and me have been the best of friends ever since. That was a lucky coincidence, wasn't it, Seamus? I said. The burglary and Annie O'Grady knowing the thief so well. Coincidence, said Seamus. I wouldn't say this to anyone but yourself, but there was no coincidence. I planned the whole thing, burglary and all, on purpose to save Annie's cottage. And no need for you to look shocked. Who was the worse off? Tell me that. Annie got to keep her cottage and her precious apple tree. I made a friend and got some good fishing rights, to say nothing of still enjoying Annie's apple pies. The Honourable Marjorie got the opportunity to act kindly instead of selfishly, lost neither her jewels nor her father's medal, and made a good friend in myself into the bargain. And as for Brian McKenna, he suffered least of all. where there never was any such person.
You've been listening to the Jerry McCulloch Podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes. Just go to the iTunes Music Store and search for Jerry McCulloch. Or you can subscribe or play individual stories at jerrymcculloch.podomatic.com. For more information on Jerry and her books, poems, stories and articles, go to her website at jerrymcculloch.com.